Can you hear me?
Yeah. Thanks for coming on and doing this for us. I'm Susanna, by the way. You can't see me. But, can you see me now?
Good evening, Susanna. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'd just like to thank you for doing this for us and staying late at work. It's just fantastic to know that we've got people like you who are real mentors for us, behind us and helping us do things like this and helping us promote and encourage and motivate other young people with the common interest. I guess you've got some sort of a presentation that you'd like to go through first.
Yeah, a little bit. Thank you, Chris, for those very gracious words. It's a great time of you. I'm pleased to be able to talk to you. I didn't stay late to do it. I went home and came back in, which worked out well. I spent an hour talking with your colleagues in Queensland, and we had a good chat. So I'm primed, ready to go. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of my experiences, show you a few things here. And what I'd like to spend most of the time doing would be to answer questions from you. So I'd like to have a dialogue where you come up and ask me questions and we talk about the answers you would like to find in space and things like that. So we can start doing that in a minute. You start thinking about what questions you have in mind. But before we do that, I would like to just talk a little bit about how I came to be in this fairly unique position that I'm in. As many of you probably know, I was selected to be an astronaut in 1992, but my first flight into space didn't come until 1996, and that was a 10-day mission on shuttle flight STS-77 on board the shuttle Endeavour, in which I spent 10 days in space in a pad module we carry on board, and we also launched deployed two satellites during that flight. It was a great experience. After that, I took on a rather more ambitious flight. I prepared and trained for a flight on board the Russian Mir space station. And I launched on STS-89 in January of last year to go up to the Mir space station, where I stayed for 20 weeks and returned on STS-91 in June of last year. So I've been back just over a year. In order to prepare for that flight on Mir, I spent about a year living in Russia, training to be a cosmonaut, learning the Russian language, learning the Russian spacecraft systems, and learning what it's like to fly as a cosmonaut. And that was a pretty daunting task, because all the courses that I had to take on that, and all the simulators, were all conducted in Russian, and I didn't have an interpreter. So I had to learn enough Russian language in order to be able to understand those classes. But then, to make it worse, after we'd gone through the training of most major systems, they would give me an exam in it. And they would sit me down in front of a panel of specialists, Russian specialists, and would then throw questions at me in Russia, in Russian, on various spacecraft systems, and I had to answer them in Russian too. So as I look back, that was a pretty amazing thing to undertake. And if you think you guys have got tough exams, you should try doing it that way. But I passed the exams and was graduated as a cosmonaut and flew last year on the Mir space station. And as this our time evolves this morning, I'm going to show you a video which will show some of the highlights of that time on board the space station, give you a sense of what it's like to live fly and work in space on a long-term basis. The reason we undertook flights on the Mir space station, of course, was to prepare for the International Space Station, a program that we've just recently begun with the assembly of some modules on orbit of what will ultimately become a huge orbiting laboratory in space. The first modules were launched last year. They're presently in orbit around the Earth. They're not crewed at this time. There's no one on board. We've sent two shuttle flights up to them. We won't be sending a full-time habitation crew until early next year. But they're up there now, so a large part of the efforts we undertake here at the Johnson Space Center is to prepare crews to fly on that space station. And the building that I'm in has a number of simulators in it. which we're going to switch to now so that you can see what some of them look like. The first view that you see here is a mock-up of the shuttle. This is just outside the window from where I'm talking to you from. This is a full-scale mock-up of the space shuttle, but to save space, it doesn't have any wings on it. It's full-size other than that, and it's a realistic simulator of what the inside of the space shuttle looks like. And we use this so that crews can come in, donned in a launch suit, in a pressure suit, and strap into the vehicle, and learn the layout of all the switches, the panels, the configuration of the vehicle. They can make sure it's configured the way they want it. And then they can practice emergency egress training. That is, quickly going out of the vehicle in the event that you've done an emergency landing somewhere, and you can trail out or climb up the vehicle. And so that's what this facility is used for, a very useful facility. As we pan left, you will see another shuttle mock-up coming into the foreground view. But this is just the nose of the shuttle you see there. It's full scale, full size mock-up of the nose of the shuttle, which is where the flight deck and the mid-deck areas are. And the reason why it's only part the nose getting mocked up is so that we can simulate launch conditions. Because during launch, this vehicle, of course, is turned toward the vertical. And so we have made this facility so the whole thing can be turned 90 degrees to rotate it like it would in the launch configuration. That's why it's only a short vehicle, short piece of the vehicle. And crews use this to go in and to practice strapping into a vehicle on your back on a launch pad. It's a very hard thing to do because you've got to crawl up ladders and things and pull yourself up into a chair in order to do it. But that's what this training vehicle is used for. As we pan further left here, you'll see coming into the view some of the modules for the International Space Station. There, as we zoom in, you see two modules from left to right. The one on the left, the white module I'm referring to, the one on the left is called the Functional Cargo Block. And that's a module that was launched by the Russians last year and is in orbit right now. And you can see it go over sometimes. To the right of that is another module, a somewhat larger module. And that's called the service module. That's also a Russian-built module, and that's going to be launched later this year. It's not in flight yet. It's awaiting launch. And it will go up and dock with the functional cargo block, which is up there, as the first two major elements of the International Space Station in orbit. The build of this space station is going to take quite a long time. It's going to take about 5 years. And many shuttle flights and launches from Russia of hardware and facilities and supplies and crews in order to fly this program and add to the space station. And we have some mock-ups here coming further left of some of the other modules that will ultimately be on that space station. Now these mock-ups aren't in the flight configuration because in zero gravity you can build it like a truss or a tree, but we can't do that. They're just flying basically on the floor. This gives you an idea of what the various modules look like. They're generally cylindrical in shape, 10 feet or so in diameter, and they're filled inside with various pieces of equipment. And I think we can go inside these modules remotely and you can see what it looks like inside some of them. This is a view inside one of the modules. It gives you an idea of the kind of space that exists inside them. These are training mock-ups, of course. This is called a centrifuge module, and that circular feature you see on the back is actually going to be a centrifuge that will be flying. And you can see bays of equipment there and racks of equipment inside the module. Gives you an idea of how spacious it is. It is actually quite spacious. It's quite a lot of room. And if we switch one more time, this is another module. This has been built by the Japanese. It's called the Japanese Equipment Module. And you see racks of equipment on each side. And that circular feature you see at the end of it is actually a small airlock. And this enables them to access experiments which are placed outside, just outside the end of this module on what they call a porch, so that they can actually be in the vacuum of space. And that's what that will be used for. Again. This is the European module. You can see racks of equipment that are in it. All the modules have generally a similar shape, of course, because they're designed to be launched inside the payload bay of the space shuttle. And one more, this is the habitation module where the crews will actually live. And you're looking through a hatchway there into one of the other modules. And all the modules are joined together with these hatchways, which have their own ceiling hatches on them, so that should there be a depressurization in one of the modules, a leak or something, you can close that hatch and seal it and preserve the integrity of the rest of the vehicle. So that's what it looks like, and gives you an idea of what the inside of the modules of the space station will be. The space station itself is going to be a huge vehicle, though, and you're looking now at a view of a large model that's hanging on a wall just outside where I'm talking to you from. And we're going to zoom in here to give you an idea of scale on this model. You can see the various modules that I talked about. And there in the upper left quadrant, you can see one module sticking out to the left, and that's actually an airlock. If you look carefully, you see out on the end of the tether there is a model of a human being. Now, if you pan back, keep that reference in mind, you get an idea of just how big the space station is going to be when it's ultimately built. See, it's going to be very large indeed. The main backbone of the space station is a truss structure that you see running horizontally in the picture from left to right. And on that will be mounted solar panels for the collection of electricity and radiator panels which will dump the waste heat. And they're very important, of course, to the operation of the space station. And I think you can see that this is a very ambitious undertaking that we've embarked upon in the first millennium of the new decade. It's going to be very exciting. Our training facilities here at the Johnson Space Center are all completed now for the operations on this space station. And because it's night here, we can't show you a lot of those training facilities, but there is one we can go to, which we'll jump to now, which is where they do EVA training, that is training for spacewalks. And that's the view here. This is another module, and it looks very similar, of course, to the mock-ups that I showed you. But what you won't be able to appreciate from this view is that this is actually underwater. This whole module is immersed in a very large tank of water, a huge tank of water that we have. It's a full-size mock-up of the module, underwater. And we use the water to provide buoyancy so the crews in spacesuits can move around the outside of that mock-up, simulating the conditions of zero gravity. So we use the water buoyancy to simulate zero gravity. So that's a very important part of our function in our training here, is to learn how to do that. And that's what this is for. And I think we also have one camera view we can go to and show a ground track of the space station. If you just stand by. We also control the operations of the space station here from our mission control center, as we do the operations of the shuttle when it's in orbit. And we'll jump soon to a picture which will show one of the views coming from the space station control center. Just stand by for a moment. And there it is. You can see it's a map of the world. And you see the three ground tracks orbit are showing three extraterrestrial space stations. The space station itself is just south of Alaska. You can see a little coloured wing vehicle there.
Dr.
That
Thomas?
That is the space station coming down the coast, and come down over the coast of California, South America, scoop up over India,
Dr. Thomas?
So,
We don't have an image of that. We don't have an image of the space station over Alaska. Here.
Okay, the operator here has apologized profusely. Now you can plainly see it because of the map. You can see the space station there just south of Alaska. The three lines I depicted that look like sine waves are the ground tracks of the next three orbits over the Earth. The other circles you see delineate regions of communication coverage and the day-night terminator. And when I was flying on Mir, I had a ground display like this, which I had on my laptop computer, and I would look at it to see where I was above the Earth, and I would have it queued so that I could see when I was coming over Australia and so on, and I could see when I was going to be flying over South Australia and so on. To get pictures from other parts of the world, and it was a great aid, and I had a lot of fun with it. Anyway, that's one of the other things that's going on here at the Johnson Space Center, is the flight control of the space station. It's telemetering down in real time, a lot of data on its health and configuration, and this is the kind of displays that they use for that control. So with that, you switch back to me, and I think you see me now, and I should stop talking for a little while and give you guys a chance to pose some questions.